This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the United States has supported Israel in its invasion of Gaza, which is, of course, a reprisal for the October the 7th atrocity committed by Hamas, which saw 1,200 Israelis die and 250 taken hostage. It was a savage assault, and Israel has now, for several months, been taking revenge. And it is some revenge. Many, many people, innocent people, have died in Gaza. Most of them, the majority at least, women and children. It is at a terrible stage now, with people unable to receive medical care, children starving. It's a shocking scene. And America has been steadfast. But over the past 2 weeks, there have been signs that what the Israelis have done in what others have called blind rage is damaging Israel, and it's also damaging the United States administration, particularly in an election year. Joe Biden is suffering with his own supporters for failing to rein in Israel. And so great is the damage done to Biden that now the United States have toughened their line. And we're joined now from Washington by Niall Stanage. Niall is associate editor of The Hill, a very respected Washington newspaper, and he is White House columnist for The Hill. Niall, it's fair to say that Israel's survival since the 1940s has depended really on United States support. That support has been massive in terms of weapons and dollars and, of course, in protection if anyone were ever to attack Israel. There has been a decline in support. There's no doubt about that, is there, Niall? I understand a Gallup poll came out this week, and you can tell us what it found and also the degree to which it was damaging Joe Biden and the Democrats in the upcoming presidential election.
Sure. I mean, I think we start off with the point that obviously the political center of gravity here in the United States is very different to how it would be in Ireland or other parts of Western Europe when it comes to Israel and the Palestinians. You mentioned the stalwart support of United States governments for Israel for many, many decades, and that had and has been reflected until very, very recently by public support. Now, the Gallup poll that you noted is emblematic of the fact that that support and the bipartisanship of that support appears to be breaking down in quite dramatic terms. One of the questions Gallup asked was, do you approve or disapprove of the military action Israel has taken in Gaza? Only 18% of Democrats approve of that action. Yes. 75% disapprove. Even 30% of Republicans disapprove, 64% approving. Those figures have led certainly for the first time in my memory, although I stand corrected if anyone's historic polls showing otherwise, to a majority disapproval among the whole American population. Now 55% of Americans disapproving of those Israeli actions And I think that has been the backstory to the kind of moves we have seen by President Biden and other members of his administration to at least put some rhetorical distance between themselves and the government of Mr. Netanyahu.
Yes, and Netanyahu is something of a rogue prime minister, even in Israeli terms. Many of his own people would not support him if he ran an election right now. And last week he cancelled a trip, a proposed trip to Washington, because he felt this sort of support that America had been giving was weakening, and they basically told the administration to get lost when they suggested that the toll in lives, particularly in young lives and innocent lives, was just too much.
Yes, and that issue or that debate came to a head, really, in the United Nations Security Council vote calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. That measure, or sorry, I should say a similar measure, had been proposed, if I recall correctly, 3 times during the current phase of the conflict, and the United States had vetoed it every time. The United States a few days ago did not veto. Now, it abstained, and your listeners can take their own view as to whether that's a position of moral rectitude or otherwise, but the United States abstention facilitated the passage of that UN Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire. Netanyahu was highly displeased about that, and in diplomatic reprisal, he cancelled a trip. It was to be by two fairly close confidants of Mr. Netanyahu, the Strategic Affairs Minister of Israel, a man by the name of Ron Dermer, and the National Security Advisor, whose name I may be mispronouncing, but I believe is Saji Hanagabi. And those two people did not come to Washington, after all, to register Mr. Netanyahu's displeasure.
Yes, and I mean, Ireland and other European countries, Ireland in particular, has been disgusted by what it has witnessed. And indeed, Ireland have joined South Africa at the International Criminal Court in supporting Palestinians and really essentially accusing Israel of war crimes. And that is becoming now the established wisdom, if you like, in Europe. For the United States, it's slightly different now, isn't it? Because traditionally, Democrats were big supporters of Israel. Now it is the Republican Party that clearly, as even that your poll numbers suggest, is their major support. But that support, even then, with the Republicans, is waning. And the stakes in November in the US election, at the end of the day, matter greatly, not just for Israel, but for the world.
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely. One point on the issue of, you know, Republican stances and Democratic stances on that conflict that I think is worth mentioning. Mr. Netanyahu, for many years now, long before the events of October 7th and the Israeli assault that followed, has, I would say, been fairly clear on his preference for Republicans rather than Democrats in power in the United States. He had a very strong personal antipathy toward former President Obama, for example.
Yes.
Now, that, I mean, Netanyahu can do what he wishes. That's up to him. But the consequence of that politically has been, I think, clearly a weakening of the bipartisan support that Israel used to enjoy in this country. There are still pro-Israel Democrats, but it has become a much more contentious issue in that way. Even if one were to look at that through a pro-Israel lens, it is, it seems to me, rather dangerous to have your nation's cause identified with one political party in the United States, because that's all well and good if Republicans win elections in perpetuity, yes, but not if if not only Mr. Netanyahu, but Israel faces a moment of reckoning if democratic support continues to evaporate for them.
Yes, and it is young people who are Democrat voters. And in the case of, I think it's Michigan, where there's a large Arab American population 200,000 plus people who would be natural Biden supporters in November, who may now either abstain or vote against, probably abstaining, and therefore one of those key states, there are seven key states, battleground states they're called, and whoever wins those states wins the election.
Yes, that's right. And we've already seen some metrics that really highlight the level of challenge President Biden and the Democrats face in Michigan specifically. In the Democratic primary, even though Biden had only the most token of opposition, more than 100,000 people turned out to vote uncommitted. Yes. That was widely seen as a pure protest vote against his policies in relation to Israel and Gaza and the Palestinians. Obviously, that kind of discontent among the Democratic base could be very, very electorally perilous for Biden come November. Even, as you rightly point out, the danger is people staying home. The people who are unhappy with Biden from the left aren't going to vote for Trump, but they might just not vote, and that would be equally damaging.
Yes, a moment in this that maybe changed minds, but certainly political minds, was an intervention last week by the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, who is Jewish, the most high-placed Jewish legislator in the United States. He came out and said this had to stop. He called for a ceasefire, and that was a moment of some significance because, in the first place, he's Jewish and the majority leader in the Senate. Secondly, he is very close to Joe Biden. That perhaps should have warned Netanyahu and the Israelis that it was time up on this proposed land invasion now of the southern part of the Gaza Strip, the last place where Palestinians can try to find some safety and where they're hemmed in most inhuman situation, starving, no medicine, no water, truly appalling stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is absolutely abject, the conditions that have been enforced upon the Palestinians in Rafah. And in fact, that has been true, I would say, of conditions throughout the Gaza Strip. I don't think anyone who is fair-minded would have denied that Israel had the right to retaliate for that appalling attack on October the 7th. But I think as the time has gone by, as the death toll has mounted, the amount of ordnance dropped on the Gaza Strip has been absolutely astronomical. Yes. And the suffering inflicted has been equally astronomical. And, you know, plainly, we are seeing people killed by the thousand who are non-combatants. And that has understandably stirred considerable outrage, I think.
Yes, and it's a moment now that the United States must make a big call, because Netanyahu has also said that what the United States and indeed the majority of people in the world want, politicians and ordinary citizens, is a two-state solution for Palestine and for Israel. Netanyahu has now ruled that out. So he is becoming more extreme and looking unstoppable. That also would be intolerable, not just in terms of what's happening to the Palestinians, the innocent Palestinians, but also to America's reputation, Niall, in the wider world, and to the West's reputation. This is taking place on television, and it's almost unbearable to witness. So for the Russians, for example, and Putin has exploited this, for the Chinese and for enemies of the West and enemies of the United States, this is a gift, an ugly, bloody, sickening gift.
Yes, I think that's all fair comment. And I would add to it that one of the massive challenges of being a president of the United States is you're almost always confronted during a four-year term by some massive thing that you either could not anticipate or couldn't fully grapple with until you were in power. So, you know, Trump had COVID, obviously. Barack Obama had economic collapse, the severity of which was just becoming evident when he got into power. I think for Biden, that has become the conflict in Gaza to many, many people on the left in the United States, but also in the wider world, that has been a kind of moral test that the administration has failed in the view of millions and millions of people. And that in turn then undercuts the kind of moral authority that the United States would wish to exert on other matters or elsewhere. And any time that the United States loses moral authority, whether it's in this conflict or the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan or Vietnam in the 1970s, that always puts a bit of wind in the sails of adversaries of the United States.
Yes.
Now, we don't, I mean, you and I are not talking about this in any way blinded to the fact that the primary concern here is the horrendous human suffering of the people in that part of the world. But it all has political ramifications, which are worth noting, I think.
Donald Trump is seen as a friend of Israel. His support has been unyielding as far as we can see from here, Niall. And of course, it's an election gift to him in an election that, if it reflects the last contest between Biden and Trump, will be extremely close. And at the moment, Trump is favourite to become the next president of the United States.
Yes, he is, absolutely. And, you know, he would be clearly far more emphatically pro-Israel even than Biden has been. When he was during his first term, he not only moved the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, he also proposed a quote-unquote peace plan. I'm making the air quotes here behind the microphone, because it was a peace plan that was regarded by the Palestinian side to be so ludicrous that, if I recall correctly, it was rejected within hours. Interestingly, and I don't think this has got a lot of coverage in outside of the United States, Trump gave an interview on Monday to an Israeli news outlet, and he said that Israel, and this is a direct quote, has to be very careful because it is, quote, losing a lot of support. Now, that comment does not negate what you and I just said about Trump being massively pro-Israel. But the fact that even he felt obligated to say that, I think does show the way the ground is shifting a little bit, even in the United States on this issue.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
We'll turn, if we can, Niall, to Trump, who has a number of issues to deal with. a lot of legal issues to deal with. He had a win in one this week and a loss in the other. Can you explain?
I can. Briefly, this is regarding two separate cases. Now, there is one which is the civil fraud case for which Trump has already been found liable for an enormous sum of money. Simple version is this is about him inflating the value of his properties to get bank loans. For example, saying that his penthouse in Trump Tower was approximately three times as large as it actually is. In that case, Trump wishes to appeal. In order to appeal such verdicts, you need to post a bond. Originally, it looked like he would have to post a bond for the whole amount plus interest, which was a ginormous sum, almost half a billion dollars, $455 million, in fact. That got very significantly reduced this week on Monday. He now has to post a $175 million bond, and he says he is going to do that. The second case is what has become known as the Stormy Daniels case or the hush money case. This is a situation where Donald Trump basically orchestrated hush money payments to an adult actress, Stormy Daniels, and a former Playboy model, Karen McDougal, to silence or mute their allegations that they had had sexual relationships with him. The loss for him this week in that regard is he wanted the trial delayed. A judge wasn't having that and has reaffirmed that that trial in the hush money matter will go ahead next in only a few weeks' time, actually. April the 15th is the date set.
And that is a criminal trial.
It is.
And the effect that is suggested by polls taken is that as things stand, with Trump not convicted of anything, Republicans can live with it, or his mega Republicans can live with it, make America great again. Even they would be reluctant to vote for him were he to have a criminal conviction on his CV. Now, most of the other trials, it seems, Niall, and there are 91 charges in four big cases, won't take place until after the November election. But this particular Stormy Daniels case will. And by all accounts, there's a very good chance he won't win it and therefore will have a criminal conviction. Whether it comes with a prison term or not, we don't know.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's up in the air. I mean, the four, as you say, there are four cases. A lot of people would see the other three as pertaining to, frankly, more serious matters. I mean, January the 6th. For example, or the retention of classified information and a related charge of obstruction of justice. Nevertheless, as you say, this is a criminal trial. The offences are felonies and not mere misdemeanours, and they carry the theoretical possibility of jail time, though most private citizens who were convicted of this charge, falsifying business records is the actual charge, probably would not be jailed on a first offence. Nonetheless, it would obviously enable Democrats to emphasize that a major party candidate was a convicted criminal, and one would expect that to have a detrimental effect on that person's attempt to regain the White House. Having said all that, we know that Trump's supporters are eager to advance rationales as to why what appears to be bad news for him isn't really bad news. And so we'd have to see what would happen if he were convicted. Not to also bang on about this, Eamon, but, you know, there's also the chance that he's acquitted. And then what happens? You know, does he use an acquittal to taint the other cases against him as all politically motivated or intended to block his political campaign?
Yes, and there is one. Well, he doesn't pay people usually. He either gets his supporters to raise the funds for him and uses his campaign money to pay his lawyers. But there was last Monday, you told me, a bad day for his defense attorney, Todd Blanche. Nothing about Trump is really funny, but on the other hand, a lot of it is surreal. Can you tell us about the... the bad day for Trump's lawyer.
Yes, not great to falter in the court when Trump is sitting beside you. He has run through a number of different lawyers in a number of different cases, and there's always the question of whether he sometimes picks people because they are telegenic or good on TV or just willing to say kind of outlandish things. Now, to be fair to Todd Blanche, who's the person representing him in this Hushmoney case, it seems that, generally speaking, he is not so outlandish as some are. But he was the judge was very skeptical of Blanche's argument that there had been prosecutorial misconduct in this case. The judge basically slapped him down a couple of times, asked him to cite, you know, references or evidence to back up this claim or to provide parallel situations, and none were forthcoming. Now, I wasn't in the courtroom, but those reporters who were there said that Mr. Trump appeared displeased with that performance.
Yeah, so he had a 10% chance of getting paid. Now it's zero. Now, there is, of course, good news for Trump with the launch of Truth Social, which is his own social media outlet where he used to use Twitter, now known as X. He started his own one called Truth Social, which I'm sure there's no irony intended, and it's been valued at $4.6 billion in estimates of its worth. So he may be the richest guy in jail if things go wrong.
Well, we shall see. It has certainly boosted his net worth on paper by very significant, by billions of dollars. The fact that it had its first day of trading on the NASDAQ earlier on this week. Now, there's lots of skepticism about that valuation. I haven't looked at its shares today to see what way it's going. I believe there are some restraints on Trump cashing in his holding in it immediately. But the important thing, I suppose, from the standpoint of these various legal cases and issues about bonds and so on and so forth, is Trump could use his stake in Truth Social as collateral for some of these bonds, if lenders were willing to accept that. And if it is, as it was on the first day of trading, equating out as a worth of $6.5 billion, that obviously gives him some money to play with there.
Now, just before we let you go, to get back to the election, there was a shocking tragedy, really, this week. And I wonder if that will have any effect on the election. It is in Baltimore, which is a big city. Well, you know the details. Sure, most of our listeners will know the details. But to put it at its simplest, a ship crashed into a bridge. Only six people died. It was in the night. Six men were missing afterwards, and some of the bodies have been found. They were fixing potholes on the bridge. But will that event, which is going to interfere seriously with supply chains and also with life in that area, will that affect the election in your view? And other than that, what are the latest polls saying about Biden's chance of holding on to the White House?
The accident in Baltimore, in and of itself, I don't think will affect the election because it is so unusual and, of course, tragic. The ship appears to have lost power, then rammed one of the supports for this bridge and caused it to collapse. Now, if it really does snarl supply chains in a bad way to the point where, say, prices were to rise or, you know, supermarket supplies and other supplies were to experience shortages, that would obviously have an effect, but I'm not sure it will really have that big an impact because it's just a one-off event, though of course tragic for the people in Baltimore. Now, in terms of the polls, there has been a very slight uptick in President Biden's fortunes. Donald Trump is still leading in most polls, Biden has been come out ahead in one or two recent polls. One from Quinnipiac University this week showed him with a 3-point lead. It's not entirely clear what is propelling Biden fractionally upwards. It could be that Trump is so much in the spotlight again because of these legal difficulties, and that could be impeding his progress. Really, I think we would have to say, despite this slight improvement in Biden's fortunes, Trump remains a favorite, but this looks set to be a very, very close election.
And it also looks set to have a third party and a very distinguished family represented, the Kennedy family. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the son of Robert Kennedy, who was, of course, assassinated in 1968 when he himself was running for president. He was a senator at that time. His son, who has some, shall we say, extreme views on vaccines and other things, he is running. He has also this week enlisted a woman called Nicole Shanahan, who is very wealthy. She's the ex-wife of one of Google's co-founders. He will be her running mate. Can they expect to take a serious amount of votes, or at least votes that make the difference? And will it hurt Biden or will it hurt Trump?
At the moment, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is polling at around about 10% in the polls. So he's not going to be president, but obviously 10% is enough to make a big difference in a very close election. Some people, including me, had thought that when Kennedy's campaign began that his support might evaporate, or that it was purely a consequence of the Kennedy name. And it hasn't really evaporated. It has ticked down a little bit, but 10% is 10%. There is some evidence in the polls that he takes a little bit more from Biden's support than from Trump's. Generally speaking, when polls are just Trump v. Biden, it is a closer race than Trump v. Biden v. Kennedy, Trump having a bigger lead in the latter scenario. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr. could have a very big impact. Two caveats we should put around that. One is, it is difficult for third-party candidates in this country to get on the ballot everywhere. At the moment, Kennedy looks like he'll get on the ballot in about 8 states. He obviously hopes to add to that a great deal. The other thing is, there is a historic trend, a bit like there has been in British politics at times, of third parties polling well and then underperforming come election time.
Yes.
So, you know, will that 10% actually be reflected in the results? Or will people hovering over their ballot papers think, this is really a wasted vote, I'll just have to go for Biden or Trump?
A final question. This is 3. I'm sorry, Niall, but it's Easter. I hope you'll indulge me.
Of course.
The polling now in general, is it, in your view, settled in people's minds? This is the second time these men have run against each other. Biden and the swing states, the 7 swing states, he won 6 of them last time, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, it probably will go to those swing states. And as things stand now, having lost 6 of them last time, Trump appears to be leading in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the key, do you think?
Yes, it is. And the question is whether that remains to be the case. What you just said is really the reason why I believe Trump to still be the favorite at this point, despite the mild improvement in Biden's poll ratings. Those 7 states are very likely to be the whole ball game, as we say here, because, yeah. I mean, a Democrat is never going to lose California, at least in the modern era, and a Republican is never going to lose Alabama in the modern era. And that pattern repeats itself in the majority of American states. So it does come down to those 7. It comes down, therefore, to turnout in those 7 states, and also who can win over the very small sliver of voters who could be persuaded either way.
Yes.
And that last point is inherently volatile because, as you know, as I know, as your listeners know, you need to be quite idiosyncratic to have watched American politics over the past 5 or 10 years and not know who you support between Biden and Trump. I mean, that's an unusual swathe of the population, and they may well hold the outcome of this election in their hands.
Okay, now, as always, we're very grateful to you. Now, Stanich is the associate editor of The Hill, a very good newspaper, particularly for people who like real news as opposed to the stuff you get elsewhere in America, which is very partisan. So we're always happy to talk to Niall. We're grateful to him, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.